Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must-listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, Janine Vosper here, and welcome to another episode of the We Are Women podcast. With me today, I have Louise Fitzgerald Baker. Now, Louise is a busy mum of three daughters, a wife, and a property developer, and most recently, best-selling author. Using the family home as collateral, she built over $42 million worth of property from 2007 and to 2017 in Brisbane. And that's working during school hours and often managing the household alone. Where many developers failed, she succeeded. And despite a static market and tight budget and strong competition, she was able to be really successful at it. But in 2006, as it came to a close, the property market hit a bit of a downturn and stress took toll on Louise's life. She was forced to urgently address her health and reassess her property, her priorities. Louise has recently released her first book, which is available electronically at the moment, and a printed version coming out early in 2008. It is titled The Pink Hard Hat, Building the Resilient Woman. In it, Louise draws upon her collective experience to help women reboot their lives, their health, and their finances, with particular emphasis on well-being and financial resilience. So using her 10-step approach, Louise has been helping countless women work methodically through the process of change. It all sounds very interesting, and there's so many questions that are already formulating in my mind, Louise. So welcome to this morning's podcast. I was going to say webinar. I've been doing those lately. Welcome, Louise.
Good morning, Janine. Welcome. Thanks for having me along.
You are most welcome. Now, that's sort of a very fancy bio. That $42 million of property. That's good going, girl.
Thank you very much. It sounds like a lot, doesn't it? But it is, remember, over 10 years. So it's worth about 14 projects over a 10-year period, and collectively, when you say it really quickly, it does sound like a lot.
Yeah, no, again, congratulations on that, because I know when we've spoken before, and as it says in the bio, you did that yourself. You know, a lot of people will be thinking that, well, it's husband's business, but that was your business.
That's right, Janine. So, yeah, you're not the first person to say that. A lot of people assume my husband's a builder or somehow involved in the real estate or property side, but that couldn't actually be further from the truth.
Mm. Yeah, and you were doing it alone?
Yeah, so at the time, my husband he's a reporter, and his background is in communications, but he was a closet soldier, which meant, as noble as that is, he was a reservist soldier, and he would frequently be called overseas. And it was during one of those long periods overseas where he was in a theatre of war that I decided there's got to be another way, that financially it was helpful for us, for him to be away, but it was a massive interruption to mine and my family's life, and I felt there had to be another way to skip ahead and insulate ourselves financially.
And insulate yourself financially as well, because that's important. We women, there's so much focus usually on what the principal bread earner brings in, which is usually the male, and not as much focus on women supporting themselves or it's just a hobby income as well.
That's right. And he was incredibly supportive. So I said to him, I've got an idea. I'd really like to give this a go. I think I know everything I can physically, mentally know about property development. I've read everything. I've imagined it all. I've just never done it. So if you back me, then let's see if we can give this a go. And he said, what's the worst that can happen? To which I said, well, the worst is we lose everything. We lose the house.
That's a pretty significant risk there, Louise.
Yeah. And he said, okay, give it a go. I've got your back. So with that, I did my first property deal I bought a couple of houses to the 3 kilometres from the city of Brisbane CBD back in 2007. And I didn't know what I didn't know, Janine. So I was just going off raw enthusiasm and a fair bit of book knowledge and really put all my chips on red. And that was the beginning of my property development career.
Wow. That's incredibly brave to do that. So congratulations on that. And that's something that you believe in, don't you? You know, there's something that's really strong within your beliefs about women being financially confident.
Absolutely. I believe all women can and should lead financially confident lives so that they can be resilient in the face of change. That's a very core belief, and I am very passionate, obviously, about teaching, equipping, and inspiring women to have a go, because we're never going to know everything. We're never going to have all the answers. We're never going to say it's really perfect. Let's wait until, you know, we have all our ducks in a row. At some point, you just have to count down and say, right, I'm running with what I have with me.
Mm. And that you mentioned change there, because so much is changing around the world at the moment. And I know that, I mean, something I did the other day, we were talking about this earlier, the statistics of women that are becoming homeless. And it's often because there's been significant change, but they just haven't had the opportunity to set themselves up in a position where they can support themselves for the rest of their lives.
Janine, the figures are alarming. It's just alarming. Women are being left behind in our country. You know, the number of homeless older women has increased 44% since 2011 and 12. And almost 10,000 older women are being, you know, are accessing support services for shelter over the last year. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, though, Janine. We've got enormous numbers of women living temporarily with relatives or friends. It's alarming, and something that's troubling me, and it is something that I want to raise some awareness of. So the book that I've recently written was, yes, about resilience, but particularly financial resilience. I think that's the elephant in the room. Mm. Previously, when, you know, we talk about resilience, if we do it all, and for many of us, it's probably not a top of mind concept. You know, we're even thinking about it. In my grandmother's generation, she was by her nature resilient, and, you know, born in the 1900s and going with the times, those women lived through First World War and the Great Depression, the Second World War, and as a consequence of what they survived through, they were resilient by nature. But today, when we talk about resilience, most of us think it in the concept of mental hardiness and physical, emotional ability to be equipped to get on with life. But it's far greater than that. The elephant in the room, as far as I'm concerned, is the concept of financial resilience.
Yeah. One of the networking groups that I attend, we started talking about this a couple of months ago, and they were bringing out statistics, you know, 1 in 7 women are homeless by retirement. And, you know, it just blew me away that those figures were so high. And it's, we keep thinking, you know, you sort of have the mindset that, you know, a lot more women are working, they're in a position where they can support themselves, but it's not so, is it? There really is a lot of women out there who do not have those resources, especially if something changes in their life, like a divorce or a death. They just don't have those resources to help themselves, and then they're not able to help their daughters and their daughters' daughters as well, because they're just not financially able to do so.
I think there's a missing link there too, Janine. We've won the right to work, and most of us have got our heads around that. We're making a financial contribution. We're earning our way. We are educated, and we have choices and flexibility and access, and more so than ever before. You know, that's a given. But what are we doing beyond work? What are we doing then? You know, where are we going in regards to our saving, our investing, and our monitoring of our financial progress? And even how involved are we with all of that? So in talking to many women, you would be surprised the number of women who, especially in a partnership relationship, in a partnership environment, is not as involved as you might think.
Yeah. I was talking to someone the other day, and it's my trainer, and one of her clients, the husband has all the control over the business, but he's starting to not be as mentally as good a mental capacity as he should have in running the business. Mm. And my trainer is saying to the wife who she trained, you really need to get involved. You need to know what's going on, because she just knows nothing, absolutely nothing about the business, the financial part, but she's a partner in it. And, you know, Jenny's sort of thinking, you've got to do something, because for exactly that reason, she was concerned he's giving the business money away and just not running it appropriately. But again, she's not involved and is not brave enough to challenge him on it, but it's her future.
Well, that's right. But by nature, I'm not a pessimist, Janine. I don't expect the sky to fall and my relationships to deteriorate. And my motivation isn't to frighten people, but to inspire them. I encourage women to expect the best, but prepare for the worst, because one day the information might be important to them, more so than it is right at this point in time. And there's no excuse for not being involved. Having some knowledge of movement of monies into and out of bank accounts, especially ones you're signatory to, and not necessarily having blind faith that someone else is taking care of it. There are many women who wake up one day and just say, what happened? Mm. I have no idea how I got here. How did this happen to me? I never imagined this could be me. And there's a real vulnerability in that I'm trying to protect them from. And that's just to say, be involved, have access, be aware of what's happening in your life financially, be aware of what you're building and what you're creating and how you're investing and where the money is going. Make sure you have access. Make sure you have a CRN and a PIN number and access to a bank account. And as lovely as it is to have someone taking care of your situation, it's very vulnerable should things change dramatically. Or even in the environment where your partner gets sick or there's a massive interruption. And it's about paying attention and just being aware that sometimes things shift and in a way we can never have foreseen. And in that environment, it's about stepping up and getting involved.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the part, isn't it, getting involved. Now, when you were developing the property, I know when I read your bio it said that the stress part of it and there were health issues and changes. So that was obviously a catalyst, again, for you to write the book, but see the need for other women? Is that where you sort of went just not doing what you're doing but realizing that it needed to be, you needed to get the message out there, really?
I think like many of us, I was just like every working woman out there. You work on top of everything else you do. You go to work, you pick up the kids, you prepare the meals, you're doing your job. It's all just piling on. And every day you have a task list and you tick through it and you get through it. But I probably wasn't giving myself the time, care or attention that I deserved. And I thought I was fine. I was functioning. And that was enough, I thought, until one day I found myself on the side of a freeway with no feeling in my hands and unable to talk, having just missed hitting a concrete wall. I thought, wow. I thought I'd had a stroke.
You would, wouldn't you?
So obviously that got my attention. What I'd experienced actually was I had got in the car feeling quite sick. And at the time, I misunderstood that feeling for just maybe dehydration. I'd come from a really stressful meeting and I was leaving the city, sitting in the car, driving along the freeway, and I began to get pins and needles in my hands. And I remember thinking, I feel like I'm dehydrating. So I had a drink of water. I'm sitting down and I thought, I don't know if I'm going to make this exit. And just as I consciously thought, I'm not going to make this exit, I lost control of my hands. They atrophied into a pincer-like grip and I was unable to move them. And I could see my body shutting down, but I couldn't do anything about it. I was on the speakerphone to my husband at the time, and then I lost control of my voice. So inside I was screaming and nothing was coming out. And I managed to have the car stationary, just maneuver it stationary with these claw-like fingers just in time, barely missing this pole. And I can't describe how excruciatingly terrifying that experience was. I had no idea what had just happened. I thought I'd had a stroke. I was 45 years old at the time. And when the ambulance arrived, all drama and sirens, you can imagine, I looked up helpless. I was unable to speak and paralyzed in my arms.
Wow. That must have been so frightening. I can't imagine.
It was terrifying. And they said, look, you've just had a panic attack. And I was thinking, well, you'd panic too if you were on a freeway and you lost control of your arms. You know, wouldn't anyone panic? But why did I lose control of my hands? That I didn't understand. And I went and had an MRI, had a brain scan, thought maybe something was shutting down. But as it turned out, my level of stress in a day that I thought was probably a 6 out of 10 was really a 10 out of 10. My body just shut down and said, no more. And I'm shining the torch on in that uncomfortable dark corner and saying to all women, look after yourself. Check your vital signs. Make sure that in all your business you're making time to look after your well-being. In regards to the fuel you're putting in your body, your sleep, your rest. I'd got to a point where, frankly, I was either tired or wired. I would just survive through a day on sugar and caffeine and then white wine in the evening. And that's not a chapter I'm proud of, but I was in a really stressful environment and it was part of a coping mechanism that I'd used and become quite used to. And for me to disrupt that cycle, I had to dramatically change the way I did life and business. And that's where I went next. I re-looked at everything in my life and said, I have to revisit this. And that was essentially my path to recovery and the 10 steps that I guess I micro-engineered back in terms of making a switch to a new existence.
And from someone, you know, if when you're feeling particularly capable of everything and then to be out of control like that, that is quite extreme, isn't it?
It certainly got my attention, Janine. You really don't want to be driving on a freeway when you have a shutdown like that. An absolutely terrifying circumstance, but something I had to pay enormous attention to. And in the hospital, I said, now you've had a panic attack, these things might come more frequently. And I had just said to myself, over my dead body, I will be revisiting how I live my life, because as much as there's a lot to be said for success in life, what's the point if you're not alive to enjoy it?
And yes, it's getting that balance, isn't it? And I think something along the way too is we often get little reminders. Now, the universe is very good at giving us little prompts about you need to take care of yourself, you need to slow down, whatever those prompts might be. And then we don't hear them. And then unfortunately, you get stuck on the freeway, not able to control your hands. It's a big prompt then, isn't it? And it does give us time to, that you have to make changes and you really have to review and look back at what you've been doing.
That's exactly right. And when you run your own business, that's always not the easiest thing. It's not like you can go back into work tomorrow and decide to do something different. You've got dependents, you've got projects, you've got deadlines that still exist in the next day. So it took me some time to unravel that situation and rebuild a new one. And that's the story I tell today. And a big part of what I'm passionate about is certainly financial resilience and becoming equipped financially, but not at the exclusion of everything else.
And we talk about a balanced life all the time. And I'm a bit, you can't balance everything because there's more hours in the day to be working than you are recreational for most people, but it's ensuring that there is recreational, that there is downtime, that there is that balance.
Absolutely. And I think we have to be deliberate about it because we're pulled in so many different directions. There's mothers, daughters, sisters, friends, many competing priorities. And a big part of establishing routines, habits and balance is about equipping yourself on a daily basis to be the best self you can be. I encourage many women, many of them forget to take care of themselves. They take care of themselves last. And that can be a habit that starts just in the next few weeks and then builds into months, and then years can go by. And sometimes we wake up and say, who am I now? What happened to that person? Who did I leave behind? Who did I forget on my way to becoming who I am now? And really, there's just so much about my message is about staying connected with what lights you up.
And a lot of women that I have spoken to are in that position where they're just going, what's happened? Exactly what you're just saying. What's happened? I was there as a mother, and then all of a sudden, especially when they sort of hit that 50-year-old where the children are usually very independent, and it's what's happened? Missed it. Where am I?
That's exactly right. Life in some ways is a fairy tale. And I know that's a really provocative thing to say, and your listeners will be going, no, it's not. No one's going to be riding in on a white horse saving me. But if you think about it, all fairy tales have their dark moments, and betrayal and deceit and sickness and pain and suffering. And I like to, I draw that analogy because often when you're in that place where you think you're the only one struggling with whatever it might be that is facing you at the moment, you're only partway through your story. You might be at chapter 8 of a 16 chapter book. And I like to say to people, you get to write the ending. You're just partway through. There's so much more of your story that is yet to be written. And don't despair. I think sometimes, particularly now we've got Facebook and Instagram and we're so immediately in everyone's lounge rooms and worlds, that it's really easy for us to compare our behind the scenes with other people's highlights.
And a lot of those lives aren't very real that they post out.
Our behind the scenes is never going to be the same as my behind the scenes is never going to be the same as your highlights. So what you're posting on your page is, you know, the best of your day. You're not putting all the crummy on in between bits. And so I like to remind people, it's just signposts, but not something that should be tearing away at your soul. You should just see that as an opportunity to share. And I like it when we're able to be real. But the reality is, in social media, most often you're seeing people's highlights and not the bits along the way. And that's not meant to be a trigger for your own despair about what's working or not working in your life or business.
I love your analogy with it being like a story, because if we look at any movie, if we look at any book, that's exactly how they write them. That's a formula that everything's really nice and might be a little bit difficult. Then it's really nice and rosy, and then there's a real catalyst that comes into most stories, because that's what has us sitting on the edge of our seat, waiting for the protagonist to get together, or they're going to create that perfect life, or that everything is going to be fine. And we get caught up in the story when it's all not going right, but we're just really on everyone's side, and then eventually at the end of the book everything's worked out for the best. And that can be all the way through your life. You can have those moments that you just don't seem that you can get through, and then you all of a sudden the story changes. And I love that analogy, because that just sort of popped in my head, because I'm reading a book at the moment that's very much in that near the end going, I just want them not to be under that stressful situation. I want them to get through. And knowing full well they will, because it's the type of novel it is. But, yeah, that's a great analogy. I love that.
Thank you. I think it is a powerful one, and I like to use it. And the fairy tale is often a metaphor that's not used because it's seen as redundant. But I think there is a real message for that. When we're preparing our daughters for life, resilience is a part of it. It's going to be a core skill that you need to develop. It is the capacity to recover quickly, to bend and not break under pressure. And as entrepreneurs and businesswomen, we can, you know, we need to have that so that we're not broken as soon as adversity comes our way, whether it be in the form of health, finances, our business, our personal mindset, whatever it might be, our relationships. That's just part of life. And in the pursuit of success, resilience is important to be able to get through that. It's a tool of recovery. And I also say that just as a ball uses a downward momentum to rebound, resilience can also help you propel you higher than your original position. And so there is a real colour in that. And sometimes my darkest moments have been a precursor to my most triumphant, colourful successes. And you could never have written it that way. And it's great to have that perspective. And I remind everyone that you're just partway through your own story.
That's excellent. And talking about a story, so in your book you start with the story of your grandmother, which you mentioned before. So what lessons in particular did she teach you about business today?
My grandmother was just fabulous. And the story actually begins, it's a true story. So in the book, we tell the story of my grandmother and my mother, myself, and then obviously what I'm teaching my three daughters. I've got three daughters. And so there's very much a strong female line, which has never really been told. And the story begins with my grandmother at the age of 79. Unfortunately, my brother, her grandson, had just walked in and found her. She'd been lying on the floor and had a stroke. And she was unable to move, but she gestured urgently for him to go to the other room and retrieve something. He walked into her bedroom, and there was a single bed, and he reached under it. And there he found a set of nunchuckers and a police baton from the 1940s. He retrieved these two weapons and walked back into the other room. And he looked at her quizzingly as though to say, "Do, what's the story?" And through her eyes, he could see that he'd retrieved the wrong items and went back again. He went back into her room and he lifted up the mattress. And there were hundreds and hundreds of dollars of neatly stacked $20 and $50 bills.
Oh, really? That she was literally banking underneath her mattress.
Exactly. So there in the 1970s, we had the equivalent in today's money of just under $1 million stashed under her mattress. And that is where this story begins. The metaphor of the cash mattress, the idea that all women secretly want the security of having a backstop, a mattress of cash, a sense that we're going to be okay, that come hell or high water, we will ride it through. And I'm not here to say that money will solve your problems or insulate you from pain, suffering, him leaving, someone getting sick, you being redundant, things happening. I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is that deep down, the reality is we all feel a little more secure with income and access to money. And when we have it, it's a real insulator for us on the road, the bumpy road ahead. So my grandmother, she really laid down the concept of a cash mattress or the idea of the metaphor of financial security. And I won't give the story away and how she actually came to have that sum of money under the mattress. You'll have to read the book, but it's a fabulous story. And then it takes that message into my mother's world and what happened for her and then myself. And all of us have very different experiences and stories, just as the reader does. But it takes the same thread of financial resilience as one pillar in enabling you to get back up again when life deals you a blow you didn't quite see coming.
I love that little teaser too. Thank you. We're all going to have to get a copy of that. You know that. Well done, because, again, what's the story behind that? But that feeling of comfort and calling it literally a cash mattress, I think as soon as you say that, you automatically get this feeling of support and comfort. You can visualize it, but it's that sense of being able to wrap yourself in that I'm feeling anyway, and I'm assuming that others as well when you say that, so that you are truly supported and you know that there's a backstop for you, and that, because, you know, everything else is, it, we need, as we keep saying, we need that health, we need good health, we need good mental health, we need, you know, all of the things in life. But a lot of it comes down to, especially as we get into our 50s, is can we afford to live another 50 years? How are we going to do it? And do we have our cash mattress supporting us there? And if not, then what can we do to change that, or in the time that we have to contribute and to work?
That's right, Janine. And today many of us call it abundance, living in abundance, in the knowledge we have enough. We don't have to have $1 million in our mattress that we sleep on at night. We don't have to be dripping in jewels. But it's the concept that we have enough, that we're okay, that we can cover our bills, that we can meet the expectations, that we are empowered enough to be able to transact, to step up, to be involved, to make decisions. We're equipped and confident and living abundantly, even if we are living modestly. And that's part of the message. It's the story of living an abundant life, living a rich life in every part of that, and obviously not obviously just money.
Yeah. And one of the things that I talk about too is the opposite to that. When you're living in lack, the decisions are made from a place of lack. So you don't make the best decisions. You feel as if you can't make the decisions for, you know, for example, investing in yourself and in your self-development, because you've got this mindset of lack as well, instead of a mindset of abundance.
That's right. And that's where I like to, I guess, take people by the hand and talk them through the actual process of that. What does it look like to peel back the layers, to actually confront a problem or situation head on and address it in a way that gives you control again? Because most of your listeners might think, I've been there, I know what that feels like, but how do you get out of that funk? And there is a process, and it's about pulling that together and just gently getting along that next stepping stone to the point where you go incrementally forward and take your control back, take your power back, and begin to live a more abundant life. Because you can't make decisions out of fear as an entrepreneur. You can't thrive in business when you come from a place of less and lack and not enough. It's just very difficult to build a thriving business with that mindset. You have to correct your mindset as part of it.
And now with the three daughters, so how do you see that life's going to be different for them?
You know, if my mother was alive today, or my great-grandmother could see my daughters now, they'd just be blown away for what is possible for them. Do you know where my daughter is at the moment? My youngest daughter is 13 years old, and you'll never guess it, but she is currently at space camp. NASA. Houston, Texas. And I'm seeing on our private Facebook page now, as you know, as she is doing a simulated moonwalk across a room. And that is extraordinary. It was made available through the school. Obviously, it's extracurricular, but not nonetheless. That's a school excursion we would have never had access to in our day. I was lucky when I was a kid to get to the jam factory. My husband was lucky to explore rocks in a local paddock. But the concept that these kids can go 13,000 kilometres away at the age of 13 and have that type of experience is just profound. And with that is personal development and concepts around time management and habits, and just really expanding the kids' minds about what's possible and what you're capable of today. So that's just so exciting and so encouraging. And as a mother, I feel she's the first of my daughters to actually do that. She's the youngest and the only one that's been on this program. But I'm doing my job. If she comes back from that trip and says, Mum, thought about it, I really, really want to be a hairdresser, then I've done my job. Because my job is to expose her to the world. What she chooses and selects from that is up to her. She might come back and say, you know what, I really want to work in science. I want to work in biomedicine. I want to be an astronaut. I want to be something. You know, she's only limited by her own imagination. But if she comes back and says, but I want to do this, then so be it. So my desire for her is not to make a selection for her, but to give her a smorgasbord of options that weren't available to women years ago, and then say, choose, pick any of them, because these days kids, they've got the ability to access any of these skills and talents. It's fabulous.
Yeah, that's amazing, and that's an incredible sort of opportunity for her to go there. And the world has changed. I was listening to somebody yesterday talking about the job positions that are out here at the moment and whether they'll be here again in the future. The jobs that are here now, in 5 years, a huge percentage of those jobs won't even be around at all. And it was really blew me away. And they were also saying that if graduates now take 5 years to find a job, which was pretty frightening for them as well. But again, it's that even in that position is doing a degree or thinking about what position you want and then it's not available, then to have the resilience to shift and move and rethink. And that's where our daughters are going to have to be more so, is more than we ever considered, because you just moved into a type of role and you continued along and you may have done things off that role, but now it's totally different. It's a totally different world, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I'm teaching the girls, and as I'm encouraging other women to do so, is to become acquainted with money and all the amazing different ways you can actually generate income. So gone are the days where you have to go to a job and work 8 hours a day, or even 10 hours or 12 hours, and then drive home in traffic and get the tea on. You know, those days are far behind us. So I see that as a real opportunity. And as I'm saying to my girls, become comfortable with different ways to generate income. So one might be money for time. My daughter, for instance, is at university at the moment. She also has several part-time jobs. So one of them is in a retail outlet, and that's great. She's learning the exchange of income for time, that she clocks in, does so many hours, and retrieves the sum of money in exchange for that. But then we've also got her managing, for instance, an Airbnb. And in that environment, she's actually got a percentage of profit. So again, encouraging her to see that money might come in exchange of time, but how powerful it is when it becomes as part of the percentage of profit. So for that job, she gets a 15% management fee. So if that property is fully booked and she manages the booking, the cleaning, she does all of the negotiation and the engagement, if she does a good job there, then her entitlement increases as that small business increases as well. So that's another way of doing it. And there are so many different ways. I talk to the girls about having multiple streams of income, becoming familiar with different ways to generate income in ways that insulate yourself so that if one of those options falls away, you're not exposed. You just fill the gap with something else. And I think that's where women are headed. I think gone are the days where we were one-dimensional about our relationship with money and work, and we're moving into an environment where there are so many other ways we can draw income.
And that's a good way to sort of demonstrate that entrepreneurial type of how you can create something differently than, as you said, just a, you know, income for time position. That's great. And it's really good learning. I think it's terrific.
I was at the beautician and I was getting a treatment done, and I was talking to the young lady about her job and her hopes and her dreams and what she was doing these days. She was asking me a bit about property, as you do in one of those exchanges where you're stuck on a bed and someone's talking to you. And she said, I've got 19,000 Instagram followers. And I went, dead set, really? At the end of the treatment, she said, have a look. And there in the picture was a much more voluptuous version of the woman standing in front of me in a very skimpy outfit. But sure enough, there was 19,000 Instagram followers. And I said, what are you going to do with that? And she said, oh, when I get to, She said, if I really put my attention into it, I'll get around 40,000 by the end of the year. And I said, what are you going to do then? She said, well, once I get to that point, she said, I might be working here. So when I went back for my next treatment, she'd gone. So really? I'm just saying that there are so many ways. Yes, there's the boardroom. Yes, there's still, you know, very much academic environments and jobs where you draw your worth from the contribution you're making in a cerebral or in a context that builds you up. But there's also way more flexibility in how that income can come your way. And that's where I encourage people to find what you really love and really throw yourself into it. A big part of this concept of financial resilience is being deep-rooted in your purpose. Find what lights you up and stay connected with it. And you'll find that you can monetize that in unusual and fresh and different ways than you've ever envisaged. And that's where it's exciting. You know, I'm seeing women working from home with families, earning enviable incomes where they're not being interrupted. They're doing it in their own times, whether it's through shares or property or performance or endorsements or network marketing or whatever it might be. They've got choices now that we just didn't have before, and it's just so exciting to see.
It's certainly a new world. Part of the story yesterday as well was a six-year-old who tests toys. I can't remember his name. And he has on YouTube, he's earning about $6 million a year.
Dead set. That's crazy.
That's crazy. That's what I thought too. It was just bizarre that he's got, I think it was a 100 million followers or something, and it was huge. And he gets paid to test toys. Isn't that phenomenal?
That is crazy.
Yeah. But that's where there's opportunities. It just takes that level of thinking something different rather than, you know, just getting a job as well.
That's it. And expand your relationship with money. Get to understand how it can work for you. And there has always been, women have always been really resourceful. I think they've always had imagination about how to generate income when they require it. And that's not lost. It's just about staying current with new and different opportunities as they're coming up.
And you definitely saw that. You know, we've started sort of around with your book again, talking about the past. I definitely have seen that with women's making sure that the children were fed and the household bills were paid, even when there was very small income, just by that resilience is one, because they had to do it, and so they had to be there and be there available. But it's also finding ways to do that that was unique at the time, or it just was hard work as well, but they made sure they did it. So it's I think it's just part of women nature, maybe.
I think women are, by their very nature, resilient and resourceful human beings. And we, you know, having worked for 10 years on a construction site in a very male dominated area, I have to say that there are moments I left my femininity at the door, and maybe shouldn't have. You know, I think really you should always be in touch with your instinct and your intuitiveness in business. And sometimes you put on that armor, or in my case, my hard hat, and you are insulating yourself, but you mustn't ever cut yourself off from what makes you unique and different. And in property, it was my lifeline. Remember that I'm in an environment where, you know, I'm in hot competition with many that have way bigger budgets than I ever had. And I had to compete in that environment. So I always had to learn in that environment to be faster, stronger, more resilient, more resourceful, better designed, and in my boutique capacity, a better offering for the buyer. And it's the same in any business. Whether the odds are in your favor or against, take what makes you uniquely feminine and take that and use it to propel you forward in the business that you're running.
Absolutely. Now, that's a good point to finish on, as you get takeaway points. So we usually have a few takeaway points, Louise.
Yes, I think my three takeaway points would be that resilience is a skill, and it can and should be learned and taught as a prerequisite for life. particularly the importance of financial resilience and insulation. And I encourage women to be involved, to be mindful about all aspects of their life that don't put themselves last, particularly in regards to their self-care and also their financial insulation.
Yeah, I agree.
My second point would be to stay educated about money. So beyond earning it, which I think we've really got down pat, to think investing and think about investing, protecting and monitoring the income that they generate. And monitoring's a big one, Janine. Often we've got earning down pat. And for some of us, even investing, we might say, yeah, I'm putting it into property, I'm putting it into shares, I'm doing something with my money, if they've got the ability that they've saved and have a component to invest. But what are they doing in regards to their own protection, in regards to insurances and being mindful about what happens next? And that's where multiple, you know, income streams and diversified portfolios can come in, as well as insulating yourself beyond, say, insurances, and thinking about just their own protection to make sure that it eases the path along the way. And then monitoring whatever they're doing. So for many of us, there can be a bit of a set and forget mentality, but stay connected with it. Keep on top of it. If it's not generating the reward that you're looking for, change it. So a big part of it is monitoring. And I guess my last point would be stay connected with what lights you up, to enjoy the journey. Life is short, and it goes beyond self-care. But one day your outlet might just become your lifeline.
Yeah, sometimes we just get so caught up in the doing, don't we? And that each day is, you know, we've set goals, we want to achieve a certain thing, we get to the end of the day, we look back whether we've done it or not, but it's just remembering that that life isn't all about work. It's also about that connection with yourself. And as you said, I love that wording, what lights you up. It's, are you doing things that you just enjoy to do as well? And the joy that brings to you when you're doing that, it takes you through those other times where you're working hard and things aren't going to plan.
Absolutely. I think you're a better mother, wife, sister, daughter, and friend when your fundamental needs are met. So when you take the time to do whatever it is that fills your cup, whether that be running or yoga or baking or sewing or singing or cooking, whatever it is, or prayer or meditation, it's so crucial to take that time to be mindful of your own needs. And I would hope that none of your listeners get to the point where I got, where you find yourself on a freeway with no movement in your hands and unable to speak, because that's when you've obviously lost touch with some of those indicators along the way. And that's not a lovely position to be in.
No, not at all. What lights you up now?
I'm getting a lot of joy about educating my girls and seeing them evolve from young women into these amazing, capable young women as they discover what they're capable of. So I'm getting immense joy from that. I'm still in property, but have put a real focus on coaching and speaking and working with women, and also very intent on the homelessness situation. That's not just something that I've watched and stepped away from, but something I'm moving towards and looking to be a part of, particularly as it's in our city. It's happening here and around us, and it's incredibly disturbing. The numbers that I mentioned are growing, and, you know, there's an argument to suggest that over the next 20 years we're going to have as many as 500,000 women in a homeless or in a very compromised position in regards to shelter and security.
Yeah, those figures are quite horrific, aren't they? And that's used. That, I mean, a lot of people do end up on the street who've got addiction or mental health issues. This is more that they just aren't able to afford to do anything different. It's just so sad.
It's a really difficult statistic to capture, because they're not technically living on a street, but they might be at the largesse of family members or renting a room or just having enough to cover the price of a room or a one bedroom or a bed sit, or maybe not even that. So they might just be living off the generosity of family and friends or couch surfing. And they're the women that are the forgotten generation of people coming up for whom somehow there were a few wrong turns, something happened, they weren't equipped, or their money ran out, or something happened along the way, and they could never have imagined themselves in a situation where they feel as vulnerable as they do now. And so they are definitely a segment of women that I care about very much and want to work with and alongside.
Yeah, that's really important. A friend of mine has a house at Cabarita that she rents the rooms out, and she's actually moved into the garage herself because there's such a call for her rooms. And there's a lot of women that come into them and stay for, you know, quite long periods of time because of exactly what we're talking about. It's a nice place to go, Cabarita, but it's still a situation where it's not theirs and they're relying on someone else to have something available for them. And that's a first hand that we're seeing. I've been seeing with her for years, and it's more so the room. That's why she's actually gone into the garage, because she's just had such a call for rooms. Mm,
absolutely. There's a real need in this city and all through Australia, but increasingly so, for us to rethink as a community about how we're housing women, and particularly because over 55-year-old females are the fastest growing homeless demographic, and that is a very scary statistic. And that's the best we can capture it. As I mentioned, there's a large number for whom we'll never capture them statistically.
No, totally agree. So how can we – just remind us how we can get a copy of your book at the moment.
Yes, so the book is called The Pink Hard Hat, Building the Resilient Woman, and you can grab that from – Amazon or myself. So the website where you can find me is thepinkhardhat.com.au, and your listeners can reach out to me personally as well. So Louise Fitzgerald Baker, I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn, and they can find me in any of those ways as well.
And when's the hard copy due? When you've got your
So January 2018, so just around the corner. We've launched electronically and the books are in print now. So really exciting days.
Excellent. Where will we see the information about the launch? Because I'm sure there's people after listening to this that will go, oh, I want to learn some more and I want to get a hard copy and meet you.
Yes, well, I will definitely be putting it out there on all my pages, and certainly you'll be on my database with that too. So if they stay connected with you, they'll be aware of it and can also reach out to me personally as well. My expectation is the book launch will be February next year, and we're just sorting out details and location and time now. But really exciting. If I can shine the light on some of these forgotten areas in regards to financial capacity and resilience, and even just get us having the conversations, then I've done my job.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And it's just been such a really interesting topic. So just repeating how you can get in touch with Louise. So Facebook or LinkedIn, and it's Louise Fitzgerald-Baker. And her website is thepinkhardhat.com.au. That's really easy to remember, that one. And you can download electronic copy. But if you're like me and like the hard copy, then you only have to wait a little while and it will be available, and we'll have some information about the book launch as well. Look, every time I say this every podcast, I've really enjoyed the conversation, but I do and I have, because it just shines a different light on what we women need to be aware of, how we can develop but how we can make sure that we are protected and we can manage the world as it changes around us, and our future for ourselves as well. So thank you very much, Louise. That's just been so interesting this
morning. Thank you, Janine, for having me. I have, for all your listeners, also on our website, thepinkhardhat.com.au, a set of downloadables. So if you've been listening to this and you're thinking, where do I fit with that? How am I looking in terms of my financial capacity, my business, my life, my health? Then that's a great starting point as well. And they can make an assessment of where they are and begin to signpost what they can do to correct it. But it's been wonderful being part of your program. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Most welcome. Thank you, Louise. And please go to thepinkhardhat.com.au to download the information packages. Thank you, Louise. And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. I look forward to you joining me next time. I'm Janine Vosper and signing off for now. Bye-bye.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.